It's also, the situation is always, everything's always more complicated than you think it is, isn't it? It's, Peter Gresser talks about how some of his Egyptian jailers were really nice to them. You know, these were people who just had a job, and they needed a job. And years ago, I met Ngugi Wa Thiong'o, famous African Nigerian writer, who was in prison for a time, came through Perth. And he told me the story about how one of his jailers came to him, yelled out abuse at him. You know, you stupid arsehole, there, more abuse talking there about you in London. So sometimes the people who are actually just involved in the administrative side of these things are not holding the views of the imprisoning body, the government or whoever, at all. So kind of what filters down and what matters to the people involved and what matters in keeping kind of freedom of expression going is sort of that trickle effect in all sorts of complicated ways.
I think it's really important to remember that this is not about the individual jailer or the individual clerk. This is about the state. Our fight is against the state. A government which has a particular policy which undertakes a particular action. We can't, many of us, not all of us, but many of us, I imagine, can't imagine what it is like to live in a place that is doing that. And if it's doing that to others, to writers and journalists, then it is an unsafe place for everyone. And and everybody has to make a living, and everybody has families they have to protect, and so people do what they need to do in order to survive. And I'm reminded, if I may tell a personal story here, I'm reminded that I'm sitting here because my heritage is my mother was Armenian, so I'm Armenian, and my mother's family was decimated in the Armenian genocide, but I'm here because. Both my maternal grandmother and my maternal grandfather's lives were spared or saved in one case, a Turkish businessman, and the other case, a Turkish gendarme, a soldier, who decided not to kill them. Who could have killed them. In the instance of my grandfather, was tasked to kill my grandfather, took him out away to shoot him and shot over his head and told him to run. Now, as Dennis says, it's a very complicated picture. So I'm always careful to remember that it's not about the individual. Yes, other individuals do dreadful things. Perhaps many of us do dreadful things.
You have an immediate sense of that.
I thought, just to bring it back to literature and writers, I would talk about, just briefly, and then we're going to throw the questions, is that right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. As part of some research that I'm doing, I had the pleasure to meet an Iranian journalist who is now an Australian citizen. She came as an asylum seeker, but as she always says to me, I'm more than a boat person. Why don't people care about that? But she's written a fabulous book called The Enlightenment of the Green Gage Tree, which long is stellar. But she was fascinating to me. It's part of some research I'm doing now about women from a refugee background. And as a journalist, sitting very comfortably in my privileged position in Australia, to hear her talk about her life was just interesting. Now she's sitting here in Australia. And I thought I just might read a short extract from the interview, because it just makes you think. So over the years, the leadership of the Islamic Republic has remained overwhelmingly conservative, and Shakoufa forged her journalistic career under these restrictions. The situation continued to deteriorate. In 2017, Reporters Without Borders ranked Iran 165th in the world for world press freedom, alongside countries such as Yemen, China, Saudi Arabia, and North Korea. Shakoufa's moved from being a journalist to a novelist, and she said, looking at me as we talked about being a journalist, it's different being a journalist in the West. It was hard for me in Iran. Your salary is not much, and you wrote because you loved it and it was important. My editor told me he could always smell the blood pouring from my stories. She said to me, I wanted to write the truth about what was really happening on the streets and in Iranian politics. And here's a direct quote from her, which just touched my soul, I think. I wrote about human rights, women's rights, child rights, labour rights, teachers' rights. Sometimes I had to meet my sources in secret to protect them. And every few months, the government would come in and close down the independent newspaper I was working on. So I would move to another one. That's what we all did. I was jailed for three times. I was interrogated and kept in isolation in rooms or cells with no light. I was frightened and feared for my life. But I don't want to make a big deal about it, because it was only for a few weeks at a time. The last time was for 2 months. That was worst. But many of my colleagues have spent many years behind bars, and some are still there now. I felt distressed imagining this vibrant woman locked in a room because she chose to write the truth. We stopped talking for a while. I looked through the branches of the trees and realised that I take blue sky for granted. It reminded me I never have to think about having freedom. Freedom just is in Australia. So those were some words from Shakufa, and her novel is quite extraordinary.
Mm. Can I just make one final comment about fake news to bring it back to the beginning? That emerged, for me, the emergence of fake news is deeply, deeply unsettling, and I feel is a terribly dangerous development because it enables attacks on writers and journalists by muddying the waters of that where we should be able to see clearly what is, or critically be able to decide what is true and not true. By muddying that, it permits a new version got sold by any government, and Western government, as we're seeing in the US, as much as any other. And we should all be, I think we should all be much more disturbed by this turn of events than we seem to be. That's all I'd like to say about that.
I give you alternative facts. Okay, we thought we'd just at this point open it for any questions or comments, or anyone's had experiences of your own. We think there are issues in Australia that are important, though we're, of course, a liberal democracy. We're much freer than many other writers in other countries, which we feel it gives us a kind of responsibility to write and act where other people can't. But we have situations such as that with the detention centres, most obviously, where anyone who works there for the government, even as a doctor or someone, has to sign something which says they'll never speak about it, which is a kind of complete silencing. We don't have a Bill of Rights. If there's nothing in the Australian Constitution about that. If we had a Bill of Rights, it would be illegal to require that. But, so we have a kind of totalitarian bit, even in the activities of our own government. Fortunately, a number of doctors at various times have just come out and said, well, bugger it, I've spoken out. So it's created now this outcry about children in detention. We wouldn't have had that before.
Yeah.
We were told that there were no children in detention.
Mm.
Peter Dutton, the minister, said, yes, they've all been moved. It turns out there are 100.
So it requires people of bravery, courageous people to risk one doesn't know if we've signed a confidentiality agreement in order to go in and help people in a particular situation. You don't know what's going to happen to you legally, reputationally, in terms of your career, if you break that agreement. So it's a courageous thing to do, and I think we should, hats off to those people who take those risks.
So,
over to you.
Kelly,
I just wanted to say, thinking about the Australian context and why it's important to think about these things is that, like, yes, we have a level of free speech that many places have not afforded around the world, but also our media market is one of the most concentrated in the whole of the world. That's like something that I don't think people like really talk about, particularly in this like current situation where people are like threatening the ABC and there's this kind of consistent attack on that entity that is standing against this like media Goliath. So that's something that I think we can kind of.
I think it's sort of interesting in Perth too. If you look at the concentration of media, it's no more obvious in Perth because we're a small city. To see the reach of powerful people who own single newspapers, if you read the West Australian, you watch the Channel 7 news, and maybe you drive around listening to 6PR, that is one view. And I'm not entirely sure in Perth that that's obvious to people, that it is one view that you're getting. But whereas, you know, and the same thing you said for me, if I listen to the ABC, I watch SBS, but at the same time, I force myself to listen and to read to Andrew Bolt. Because I think it's beholden upon us to understand what's being said. I mean, it's a time you have chocolates and socks to throw at the screen. But I mean, I do think it's important to understand where other people are coming from.
And because otherwise, we get the echo chamber.
Yeah.
So the echo chamber can be, you know, we can set up an echo chamber, whatever our views are. It's not just the, you know, the kind of right. So we need to be careful of that.
Yes, I can't bear to watch him. I do read the thing in the West. Sometimes he has good things to say.
He does.
He's a self-righteous kind of arrogant character. He's always people.
You've got to get very nice.
Barry Cassidy talks about Sky After Dark. Sky News during the day is totally different to after about 6 p.m. when you have the right.
It's quiet.
It's not so much their views as the kind of self-righteous arrogance that sort of gets me.
But the argument would come back at us that the ABC is self-righous and arrogant. I would disagree.
Well,
but
yeah,
I mean, you know,
I think
I mean, that's the alternative view that is spoken about with just as much vehemence. So I always wonder about how you get the bridge, and I'm not sure.
Independence.
Robbie.
Independence.
Yeah.
It's how they get
rich.
The Wentworth.
Yes. Well, I gather the right's response to Wentworth has not been to say, oh, we're wrong, we've got to change, but rather to kind of entrench themselves.
Yeah.
Right. I didn't know this.
I think we've moved into politics,
Robbie. Well, it's not entirely politics. I heard that on Insiders this morning before I came in. Robbie.
I think also what's interesting is talking about where we stand in a located way, thinking about our region, thinking about our media, thinking about personal experiences such as Marcella's, but also Peter Grester's. It's also the role that Penn plays at an international level. So the World One Centre, and we sign a charter like thousands of other members around the world. And what that is essentially about is freedom of expression, but it's also about being an active global citizen. So we can do things locally that are really important. But we also participate in thinking about translation and linguistic rights, and that might be for Kurdish people, or Basque people, or Uyghur people. And there are Penn centres that represent all of those writers in those places. And that's incumbent upon us as people of relative privilege to act, as all three of you suggested, in a kind of positive and activist way. For the not only the correct term of free speech, but what it means to participate in the public, to be part of a public sphere for people who are less privileged. So I just wanted to say thanks for that, but also to encourage other people to join a broader church and to participate in any way you feel like you can. Because
you can join online, right? But you know, being a class, I actually printed out some forms. So I have a few forms with me if you'd like to take one away and have a read.
And the other thing I would say is
actually the president.
One of the other things I would say is that we also do these things for ourselves. Like, it feels good to help other people and to participate in a community and to be active in looking after other people and being part of that conversation. So it's like, it's altruistic, yes, but there's also a certain sense of pleasure that comes with talking about this and like reading the work of people who matter and people that we care about.
Can I just add something that we haven't really mentioned publishers in this discussion, and there are, they are also targeted, they're also at risk, and they may not be the ones who actually write the copy or write the manuscripts, but they take risks too, and they suffer the consequences.
They're the ones who get sued rather than the authors, because it's in the paper.
And they also disappear.
Yeah. Hong Kong. Yeah.
I want to mention that it's easy for us to kind of agree on a whole set of views and kind of feel complacent, but there are actually a lot of complexities when you come to it. That review of the libel laws that's just starting in Australia concerns the digital environment. Currently, if you publish something, West Australia publishes something. Well, Fairfax publishes things about Ben Robert Smith, so they may be quite scurrilous, I have no idea. But there they get sued. If those things were on Facebook or those things that are on any digital platform, the platform owners don't get sued. So there's quite different legal rules around the digital environment to the print environment. Whether that's a good thing or a bad thing is actually very difficult to decide, I find. There are other issues. Back when pen existed in the 1990s, I was heavily involved. At one stage, David Irving was going to come, wanted to come to Australia to do a lecture tour. He's the British historian who denies that the Holocaust ever happened. And we had a division, even on the Penn Committee, between those who supported refusing him a visa and those who thought he should be allowed to have a visa and come and speak. I was one who thought he should be allowed to come. Should allow him to speak and speak against him then, and people could hear both views. The government, in the end, refused him a visa. So is that... We had someone who applied for membership, who's now passed away, and we refused it because he had banned the publishing of one of his wife's books in Western Australia only, because she wrote something about one of their children who was handicapped, intellectually handicapped. There were a whole bunch of people who were members of PEN who thought that was the wrong thing to do. If you join, you sign the PEN Charter, which has got things about responsible freedom of expression. So there was the, while Rudd was Prime Minister, there was the Bill Henson debate with those photographs. Personally, I feel they're a bit iffy. Most of the arts community, of course, was on Henson's side. But you do get, even in Australia, lots of issues where the line isn't as clear as it is when it comes to things like fake news.
It's I agree. So if you join, it'll be a lively and robust discussion.
Which is
also a pleasure. It's a kind of pleasure, isn't it?
Well, we welcome the debate.
Yes, thanks for coming.
Yes, thanks very much, everyone.